Thought it would be a propitious evening for us to gather in a very informal way and gather our combined wisdom about this particular set of days at Holden, the Rainbow on the Mountaintop days. We have no particular format to follow tonight. The forum is the place at Holden where really open discussion is most often the order of the evening, and I think it might be appropriate to get a little bit of background out on the table or in the fireplace, and probably the most appropriate person to do that is Elmer Witt, the director of the village, who's been in on this thinking about the Rainbow Weeks, and also I think has known Elmer in your role as a village old-timer, somebody who's been coming up here for 25 years and knows the strengths and the weaknesses of this place and what it's been, to give us a little bit of background on this place, the Rainbow, in some context. And basically, I think then let's just throw it open. Some people in the room have been heavily involved in planning and executing what's going on in these 2 weeks, and some are new to it. Let's just brainstorm, but Elmer, maybe you could open it up with some background.
Well, obviously the place is white. That's what many people notice when they come here, and has been for all those years. It was Scandinavian in background. The people who put it together were largely Scandinavian lay people, the Lutheran Bible Institute and others in obviously some of other ethnic and European background. But I would think that my recollection is quite early on, maybe 3-4 years after the place had gotten going, that we were talking about ways of seeing to it that we have people other than white folks coming here. I think it began mostly with the Indians, and probably began also when we got it did begin when we got Will Hertzfeld and the Trust and their family, and Jim Cohn and his family up here. And Jim brought some people around. I don't remember who. I remember they weren't invited, and it was great because he just brought along whom he wanted to, and that was great. And it was sort of a tough time in that first, I think we'd have to call it an encounter that took place. And then along the line, there's always been discussion about it, to the point where surely years ago, and I wouldn't be able to say, 10, 15, maybe more, the Holden board became concerned about what do you do? We keep talking about it and nothing happens. And even to the point of setting some money aside, how can we stir it up? How can we put ads out or go places, whatever it may be. And then letting all that sort of accumulate, it was last year through Jody and Ingrid being our coordinators that we made contact with SICM, and I always forget what SICM stands for.
Conference on Inner City Ministries of the ALC.
We're meeting in Seattle, and we made some efforts to get part of those folk to come here and tried to arrange rides for them back and forth. And at one time we thought we'd have about 20, and it turned up, I think, we had six, something like that. They came here for what I would call 4 days. And we were delighted to have them here, and they fully participated. And then Jody and Ingrid and those people and I sat in the living room, Shelley Ford, and said, how did you like it? What happened? And we talked about it. And then we said, how do we go about getting more? Well, all along the line, we were pretty sure it wasn't going to work by just going out and getting one or two people or one or two families to come. Because then it happened. We had a couple of families from the congregation in San Francisco, I remember being there. From that congregation. And we have had occasionally other black people, for instance, and other backgrounds on teaching staff, but it didn't work. It doesn't bring the people. So that's when we said, well, why don't we have a time where we can bring a larger segment, a larger group of people, and there will be as many 60, 65 or something like that, folks of black background, and culture here during the 2 weeks that we're doing it. We said that's the way to try and get it into some mode where it'll click and spin on and go on from that. we've been inclusive, or we've tried to be inclusive all the way along. We just haven't made it on many fronts. This year, I don't think we're as inclusive as we should be as the women on the teaching staff. And that's an embarrassment to me because I put the teaching staff together. And, so we're working on ways to get around that. It doesn't always work the way you want it. On the other hand, we're not always as good at it. So it's been a failure part of the village's life, one that we're conscious of and we're trying to work on. And we hope that this thing, this event, just keeps spinning it so that we can have a more natural flow, but a flow that we're always intentional about, too. So ideas and responses will be helpful. If there are questions, I'll be able to try it again, but I think the point would be to get into what now.
Any reactions? Questions? Yeah.
No, suggestions.
Suggestions, good.
One of the things that we do in our churches in Chicago is, for instance, in relationship to Lutheran Outdoor Ministry Center, mm-hmm. we have an LOMC Sunday, and we focus on that, and we do presentations on that. We have people who have been there to, youth from the congregation to do presentations mm-hmm. on what their experience was, how this helped them change their life, whatever. And I think if you had some emphasis like that across the country by people who have been here. Like, for instance, these three kids that I brought here are going to be real recruiters for Holden Village because they are having a wonderful time. And, that kind of thing, to build on those relationships, I think will ultimately be to your benefit, to everybody's benefit, aren't they?
Actually, I would not have known about it had it not been for the secretary of my church, who happened to just send me the flyer because she saw, or he saw, Rainbow on it and said something. Otherwise, I would not have known about it at all.
Yeah. Maxine would not have known about it if it hadn't been for me. Because she literally did not get any, her church did not get any information about it. And I said to her, hey, look at this, you have to, and I helped her to try and find kids from her congregation to come. We couldn't make it. But I think if she had had the information herself early enough, she may have been able to do more in those lines. So,
What you people have to help us see, how do you get those names? We spent a year writing to everybody that we knew about in this country. I didn't guess how many letters he sent out, asking for lists of names of congregations that we should receive it. And we sent them to everybody that we received, but obviously we missed a good number of people. There ain't no such list.
Do you have access to the official rosters of the three churches?
Yes, but by asking them who these people are, we don't mail to everybody.
Okay, that's what I was asking. Right. Don't do a nationwide
mail. We never have. We'd have the problem that we have this next week.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Every week.
And we don't want to get, recruit or aim at kids because we want adults. It's an adult retreat center. Right. I mean, kids come with adults, but we're aiming this thing at adults. Right.
Pete, you
want to
jump in?
Yeah, I just think it would be helpful to seek out those platforms whereby we have captive audiences. For example, among the people of color in Lutheranism, I think every major culture has or has had an assembly of that culture. Mm-hmm. And one of my experiences that was really critical to me when I first got here was the first orientation. But what was intriguing to me was a very fast blurb on the whole village, kind of what mm-hmm. it was about and so forth. Now it seems to me, in this age of technology, if each group had something on that order to show its people,
sure.
and or seminary, and or somebody in the Senate, or even at the convention itself. I think that would be a tremendously quick way of doing it, one. And then the other thing is to utilize the firsthand experiences of the personal witness and witnesses mm-hmm. of those of people who have been before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In conjunction with what Pete's saying, active recruiting in seminaries is really vital because every seminarian that I've talked to has been to Holden Village comes back with glowing reports. And when I decided that my kids and I were going to do this, all I had them do was talk to the people who had been to Holden Village, and I didn't have to sell it at all. So, you know, because then you're going to be reaching the future pastors who will pass it on to their congregations.
Yeah.
Julie, is it prohibitive from the standpoint of cost, you know, just sort of to make a one contact to all the pastors?
How does that work, Barry Helmer?
No, it isn't a very effective way to reach people. That's our experience. We make mailings on the West Coast, and we do that, and it doesn't get through. If the secretary finds it and passes it along, it doesn't. That's a blunt response. That doesn't mean pastors are good. It just means pastors get stacks of mail.
Yeah.
And they don't pass it along as effectively. Yeah.
It's not a good use of about $1,500 is what it would cost us.
Yeah. Well, that was my question.
Yeah, it's about $50.
It's much more selective.
And this, the reason I asked the question, because I'm about as far as you can get away from Holden, you know. And, we heard it, you see, from the Southern District. We've known about it for years, and of course been here a number of times. And I assumed that maybe your, I don't want to call it a problem, but the situation is here, like every year we have Luther Academy in Colorado, which comes out of Wartburg Seminary, and the constant complaint is by pastors that they never hear about it, you see. And so, of course, they make just some spotty announcements here or there, but I guess it's largely to alumni and so on. So that's why I brought it up.
Yeah, we have more people that we can handle coming now.
Yeah.
Many more. We have to maybe move staff out of rooms next week to take care of it. But what we're talking about is how do we get into those particular people that we want, for instance, on a focused emphasis like this. Or when we want to increase our winter activities, there, you know, it's another kind of a focus thing. We're a little afraid of too much publicity just because we say no so much to people. I don't know what Tom told me. He turned down per month of people that wanted to come this summer. But it is that focus that we have to get, and that's what we're looking for here.
Jeff?
I'm just wondering if next summer there are already ideas floating around for doing something similar. Because I don't think it's going to take off on its own. I mean, I think it's going to take some intentionality and, you know, building on what Pete said, maybe trying to find some key people who, you know, one of the things that the organizations I've been a part of have done is that people who have liked the program that we've done, you know, even relatively well-known people who have participated have agreed that they would give one or two blurbs during a year as part of their gift to the organization. I wonder if maybe we could, you know, get some of the people who have come for this, who have participated, if they feel good about the experience, to really do some dreaming about next year and target some of those specific groups, as Pete was mentioning.
That sounds great.
We really found this year that it was that personal contact of people who were willing to say, let's do this. You know, you come too. Mm-hmm. That's what made the difference.
Actually, I agree, because I'm sure there are people in my congregation who would come if they only knew about it. Mm-hmm. And if you have people go back and tell others about it, I think that's probably one of the best ways to go here.
Yeah. Like yourself?
Yes, I would be glad to go back to my congregation.
Sure.
The thing is that, you know, in Southern District you hear about it, but there are parts of the country, for whatever reasons, where Holden is literally an unknown quantity, it seems like. I mentioned Holden in Southern California, and I think, is it in, you know, they, you know, for all they know, it might be in, you know, Lower Slobodia.
Well, it's certainly been that all the time in Black community.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Virtually unknown in the Black community.
Yeah.
And nobody, there's been no experience up here.
Yeah.
You know, beyond the Hertzfelds and a few other families that have come up.
Yeah.
Seeing Chris Stenmeyer reminds me that one way that would be wonderful to deepen and make broader this general thrust is to try to get some people of color up, more people of color up on staff. Volunteer staff. People to come and work for 3 weeks as Lawns and Gardens or Waitry or Mavericks or Carpenters or whatever. Especially young people, I suppose, but you know, whoever.
18 and over.
18 and over. And that would be another way of enriching Holden and also of adding in numbers, and I just think it would be a real good thing to do, and that would be another kind of emphasis for people to come and they stay here 3 weeks minimum and have their way, have their cost while they're here paid for them, the room and board. On volunteer staff, and Chris is in charge of recruiting people for that, but we certainly would be open to any contacts in that department too.
I don't know just how the registration works, you know, but I know that we didn't take registrations before January 1st. For an emphasis like this, could you set aside a certain number of, say, keep open a certain number of registrations,
believe me,
and then do it before January, before the others come in?
Our experience with that, Gary, is that the further you get away from the dates, the more cancellations you have.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
And one of our problems next week, why there are more people here than we can handle, is that the cancellation rate was reduced because we moved to January. And so when we were running 22% cancellation rate, that really, you know, then you had so much turnover that people would have to decide in September of the previous year what they're going to do next July. And they would decide because they wanted to try to get in, but it wasn't sure. And come around January, February, you know, they maybe changed their mind. So that's one of the problems.
But you are, in fact, open to holding.
We hold the block. That's what we did this time.
If we hadn't, we wouldn't have any. We wouldn't, yeah. Be in the January.
Many of the reservations now have been within the last, for Rainbow, the folks who came specifically to that were in probably the last 2 months.
Sure. Did you fill up the block this time?
No.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I think we did.
Okay. Pete?
Yeah, I have another idea. Think about that, and he had another idea to submerge. No, I was just thinking about this. If somebody mentioned that you have to be pretty intentional about it, and you do, primarily because these are the things that the people of color have not been part of. No blame nowhere. When you're not in a rut of doing something, you got to intentionally get the rut started. But now, here's how I see that moving too. Some other thoughts on it. But number one, black theologians get together, and some of us can make sure that we are so organized that it can happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I'm the chairperson of a multicultural council of theological education in Lutheranism. Mm-hmm. We're going all the way to Puerto Rico. Why shouldn't we come here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just saying, I wouldn't have thought about it, but we could get together and really just channel that in there, program that into the system, and then intentionally get it. But that's another one. The third thing that came to my mind is that the black women are getting together at the end of this month. Why shouldn't they have been meeting here? I'm talking about all the black pastors and our key lay black women that are getting together in Chicago. Well, they don't need to be in Chicago. I don't need to be there either. I have no clue with you all around. But, you know, it just seems to me as though if that were programmed into the mindset and we were able to make a roll pitch that the next time they meet, you know, perhaps, you know, we could, in due time, organize something like that.
Sure.
And then, obviously, there is a multicultural commission.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is no reason why that commission should not have in its docket some kind of retreat where it gets its act together with its execs and all the rest of stuff up here. Same way with all these individual indigenous cultural boards that we've established through Lutheranism. So I think the mechanisms are there. It's just having those of us who are here that know some of these people, we just intentionally lock it in there, you know, with your help,
sure,
to get the job done. I mean, if that's going to be an intentional focus, we can kick that out off the platform.
If you're talking about trying to get people of color on the staff, young people, I think you could, couldn't you send like the flyers to the black student unions of some of the liberal arts schools? Because we get lots of kids from all the Ruthven liberal arts schools that are white, but they're black.
We've actually done some of that. We got a list particular advisors on campus, yeah, that sort of thing. The key, though, still is if people don't know about it and they receive a flyer, they're not going to pay any attention to it. The key is still what Pete's talking about. It's having people make those personal contacts.
But many of those places we have those people around, they maybe aren't playing the particular role we want them to play.
Yeah.
But in most places, like Luther College or wherever it may be, we've got key people there that we can plug into.
But I'm not disagreeing with you. The key is making contacts with those people.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've talked to Chris a little bit about doing some recruiting for Lutheran Student Movement National Assembly.
Hmm.
And that brings, we intentionally invite a lot of international students,
right,
mm-hmm,
black students, people of color. So let's do that.
That's good idea.
Excellent. We've been talking so far almost all about recruitment. Right? Do you
want to? Well, I would have raised that same issue.
There are more things to talk about, probably.
When so far we've been talking mostly about recruitment. When you relate the question of recruitment to the issue of programming, a whole new set of questions come up. Maybe a transitional question would be, and it's a question perhaps to pose for you first, Elmer, and that is it in your mind to be recruiting primarily at a time when there is just programming for a special focus, like 2 weeks of Rainbow, or is it also in your mind to be recruiting for throughout a summer, for example? And if so, is there also, does that also mean some kinds of special programming, maybe not as intensive as Rainbow, but a special emphasis on multicultural programming throughout the entire summer? And has that, if you thought through those two dynamics, and how would that work out?
Mm-hmm. Multicultural would be the goal for throughout the summer, no question about it. We don't always recruit black people, but wherever it may be, that's one of the goals. What we need is the bigger list of people to draw from for that. But the goal would be to continue an emphasis to keep the meals going, but to have it spread through the programming of the summer. And through the winter part of it. He just asked Will to come up during the winter for winter sojourn today.
But then if the goal is to have people of color think of, have it occur to them that going to Holden would be a good experience, and break down some of the barriers so that people get used to it and get in the rut of doing it and tell other people, then the programming here has to be flexible and meet people's needs once they're here. It can't be all about being a Norwegian.
And it can't be just non-Norwegian or 2 weeks of the year. It's got to be whenever there is a significant presence.
That's right.
Well, yeah, well, programming attracts people as well as people develop programming.
I think that, I mean, the varied programming is important for all these new regions. You know, I mean, for me, the idea of Rainbow on the Mountain is not to help some blacks come to Holden. Yeah, it's to help people who are here all the time learn about the situation of the rest of the country.
Right.
And so for me, even, you know, that programming is crucial no matter who's here. I think it'll help other people come, but I really feel a lack of that here. Or I sense that that's been that way in the past at least, and I think that's really crucial.
Well, your target then is not just Luther.
Well, that's right.
Or black.
Other notions or reactions to the questions around programming? We've now had 3 days or so of at least a little bit something a little bit different than sort of normal holding programming, some different folks around, some different kinds of vespers, some different music around the village, a little bit of different look and feel to the schedule, particularly on Tuesday. Some more different things are planned for the next week or 10 days as the village continues to celebrate the rainbow. Do people have any reactions to what's going on so far that you want to share? Does it raise any possibilities for you that we need to be thinking about for the future? Responses, reactions, how do we build an agenda for a Holden that is multicultural? What kind of a place would a multicultural Holden be? From what the last 3 days tell us.
Well, that's the most exciting part of it, for me at least. You know, it's been the vespers, it's been the music, and it has been fantastic, I guess is the easiest way to say it. But I want more of it. I want more of it in the sense that I want to know what our, you know, what are Oriental Lutherans doing, you know, and you know, there's a lot of other, you know, those ethnic traditions and ethnic musical traditions that are part of our heritage, our growing heritage that I want to encounter.
I guess I was tonight I was thinking beyond Holden or only moving out into the larger church community, and I was watching the Rainbow Choir, and I saw all these wonderful white-haired old ladies getting into the songs. It made me think of my own church and how neat it would be if we could maybe get a musician to come be a musician at my home church for a year. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to see if we could have some kind of exchanges like that.
Even for a month.
I'm hoping that I think this is going to happen. That for me, that's been a really beautiful part of the week too. The worship together and the music, and also the substance of Will's sermons, which I think we haven't really dealt with very much yet. I think there were a lot of challenges that were posed in those moments, and we haven't had vehicles for following up on those. We haven't talked much about what racism is. We haven't talked much about how that gets manifested in the economy. We haven't talked about how things have changed and not changed maybe that much over the last 30 years. So I'm hoping that we're going to get to that, because I think we're going to need that worship to remind us of the unity and the diversity, but we're also going to need some clashing to remind us that that's part of the world, but it's not the world.
One of the things I found impressive is to have a different Bible study leader each morning, and also that there was no conflict, nothing else is scheduled at that time frame. I recognize that it's a different way from what I've experienced before.
You're saying so far you've enjoyed that?
Different
approaches each morning?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't quite know how to put my reactions that I've been sitting here trying to think about, but the sessions that I've gone to have been really heavy for me. In a sense, kind of negative, seeing the negative side of our culture, and I think it kind of started perhaps, well, 15 years and our earth is not going to be able to live, you know, and you have all of this disaster, you know, looking us in the face, and including our relationship with other cultures, you know, and people of other cultures and languages. And I'm hoping that there's going to be some more positive things coming up, you know, to kind of counteract that. But one reaction I'd like to just tell you about is very personal, I guess. When Marilyn was singing those the spirituals of a black mother, my personal reaction was, I felt so ashamed for my own race that I didn't feel like I was really worthy to sing in the rainbow choir, you know, and sing their kind of songs, because, you know, here we were, here I am, I'm part of that, that did all that to those people. And that spirit in the United States is still around. I don't know what to do with that, but I just thought I'd throw it out.
Thank you. Let's go back. Yeah.
I don't know that this fits up alongside or again, but I think one of the most beautiful pictures for me was to have Marilyn standing there singing at that podium with the inscription, "We have this treasure." We had this treasure, I had this treasure in Marilyn at that point, and in her song. This I perceived as a real gift to my end of the human community, to allow me into that experience. Yeah, the guilt is there, the history is there, and yet it seemed to me like a real sharing that's okay, we're going to do it now, we're going to do it again, we're going to do it right. It was just, you know, my own emotional impression of the thing.
Thank you, Sherry. And then
I'm a white Southerner from a very conservative town in East Texas, home of the state prison system, and there's a lot of misconceptions out about people that come from the place that I do. And rather than look at that as a hindrance, I look at it as a wonderful opportunity for me to go out and break down some of those misconceptions. So rather than feeling guilty about where I'm from and who I am.
You resonated all kind. I mean, you started talking and I just kind of went twang, because yes. The sessions that I've gone to have been very heavy. The not despair, but the threat, the depressingness of it all. And yet, I listened to that woman sing, and I can, you know, I'm vividly aware of that guilt. I've known Will and Tressa for many, many years and worked in a black community for many, many years. And yeah, I listened to those songs, and those songs were about hope in times just like this. And I figured if they could have hope and they were a lot worse off than I was, it was a message there for me to get a hope also. And it made me feel a lot better. It made me feel that, you know, even in the grimness of the world, you know.
Alden, and then.
Yeah, two comments. One on Marilyn singing. You know, I've been around music and concerts since the 30s, and back from Marilyn and Marian Anderson's days, all the way through. And I've never heard anybody sing those songs with the restraint and sensitivity that she did. And it's a very unusual thing. I had a chance to talk with her about that. And I just want to express how beautiful that was in this sense of having seen so much music over my life and what this meant, what she's done and her view of the future. I'll be working with her on some things later. Now, I want to go back to what Bishop Will Hertzfeld was saying. I'm an outsider, but I just want to raise this question. I can foresee, in carrying on the rainbow-type programs, the interaction. And the positiveness, I feel it's a challenge in everything we've been dealing with this last few days. And sort of within us, like a brother here is talking about, you know, working with things, you work through it yourself. And you feel much more positive when you're achieving something. And this whole question of the rainbow and organizing interracial activities, and I'm hit with, how are we going to get the black bishop in Chicago, for example? Woman pastor, the sister explained that, 13 votes away from it. So how do you get the votes? And how do you, in other words, enough of a rainbow program and consciousness so that a lot of the white voters see need to break down a lot of the old race and stuff and come on with a much more human situation, and you get the votes and you start getting people in the positions more. So I hadn't heard much discussion on that since Bishop Hertzfeld ran through it. Well, just to say, well, you got to get the votes, but that's really symbolic of a human process proceeding and a lot more strength being consciously built up across many churches. Well, I guess all of you have been into that a lot. That's what you've been doing here, a lot of your discussions. But, I sure wish the best. And I don't know if I'll be around to help much, but I sure wish you well in this program. But I do the same in areas where I work.
Appreciate the political advice, Alden. Thank you.
Well,
my seminary professor, who shall remain nameless, said to me once that a feeling of guilt may be the beginning of wisdom, and said feeling guilty isn't the problem, but what are you going to do about it? And I think that what has to be done here, and what I've tried to do in my ministry, is to, in some way, make sure that there's no reason for me to feel guilty anymore. In other words, you know, make a decision that from here on, I'm going to do it the right way instead of the way I've done it in the past.
Let me just throw in, I feel like some of this is directed at me and I appreciate it.
No, that wasn't directed at you.
Well, I'm taking it.
Oh, okay.
But I did continue singing in the chorus.
Yes.
Having grown up all my life with a traditional Lutheran Bach technical choir background, I find it a real challenge to me to look at Tress's face singing as I'm singing to her, whatever. And letting go of those traditions and opening up and allowing myself to get rid of those ties that bind. And there's where I sense the rainbow connection. And I want to be led farther along that path in the sense that God gave us the gift and we don't have to package it all the time. That it can come out in a variety of ways with a variety of feeling and depth. And when I look at the choir, they're little ones, big ones, old ones. You know, it's a very inclusive group of people. And that's a symbol. And that's where I feel the closest.
Mm-hmm. Carl?
I felt some of the same feelings. I was sharing with Will before he left because I felt quite strongly after his sermon on the Sunday evening service. And it took me 2 or 3 days to kind of think about his remarks on the new church, the LCA, and then in the evening some of his remarks about his colleagues, the colleague bishops and other church bodies, saying that the ELCA had started with something really quite unusual, except for the rather negative aspects of the that relates to the appointment of executives and election of bishops. All I can think is praying that Will go and be elected bishop. I hope and pray. But what I shared with him, because I knew he was getting away, was the result of the experience here at Holden. And that would be if the ELCA could break away also from kind of its traditional way of being so internalized. I come from a community where there are no people of color in the congregation, of 1,200 people, I suppose, in a nice area. I've been in founding president of another congregation in another area where we had few. So what I thought would be an interesting idea to explore only, to see what the feasibility might be, would be to take kind of an evangelistic team, color, you know, great preacher like Will, great musical director like Tress, and really fund a kind of a evangelistic team throughout the United States and new ELCA. In other words, a lot of preaching, you know, reaching, singing, teaching mission about this whole new kind of dimension, not just new, but a new dimension, at least in with the new church body. So they could come to Tacoma Pierce County and really do something in terms of talking about this new possibility, this new opportunity. Now it takes money, you know, but when you say, once you get over the guilt, then I like to see something happen and see something move and do something, and that's not easy to do. But I think that the church could set some priorities in that area, possibly do something like that so that our church could be magnified in terms of the ultimate goal of spreading the gospel, which and bringing people to Christ.
Thank you.
Joe?
Triggered a couple of responses in the, some of the things you've said, and that is, I think that some of the agenda we have is a better understanding of racism and of multicultural developments and so forth in the ELCA, but also picking up on what was said back there, maybe identifying something of the political and organizing task we have to get some things done. We are only at the beginning. If Will can describe some of the really beautiful immediate results of that and also some of the really depressing results of that, then what some of that does is help us to identify our agenda for organizing and the work we have to do. For example, there is some real important organizing political work that needs to be done in the regions of the ELCA in order to develop multicultural staff and resource banks in every one of the regions. And that is something that's allowed as a possibility, but has to be developed as an agenda of the synods and has to be requested and organized from within the synods that kind of stuff will happen in the resources. So those kind of teams you're talking about can be present and are developed and do the kind of grassroots kind of teaching and preaching and working and developing. So I think what you're doing is something, speaking about is some stuff that can also be done in Holden, that the identifying of that agenda and that kind of the preparation for the organizing task that we all have in the years to come gets identified for us.
I'd like to see the new church at large, the leadership, really grab a hold and make some strong pronouncements to that effect. Yeah. If it's like the, I feel the Lutheran church is so lacking in kind of inspiration and reaching out that I wish someone would grab a hold of it and do something. I think that's been done.
I think it has to be done, a lot of it from the top, but I think its motivation for it and its organizing for it has got to be organized by people like us at the grassroots.
I think this conversation and this discussion is so good because the ideas are emerging. It you know, has to be politicized. I mean, that's the right word. You have to move.
Others? Barry?
I guess I was just going to say, also in response to both the last comments, I guess it's part of that makes me feel uncomfortable. Not in terms of the multicultural resourcing and that sort of thing, but I think that there's a real danger at some point of moving in, if you're seeing sort of an evangelical team, it becomes too much of a dog and pony show, so to speak, of sort of putting on parade another culture, but you're still in almost an entirely white congregation. And I guess I hope that's not what happens at Holden. That there's obviously a whole sort of gradual step that we have to take, and at some point, particularly this year, I mean, you know, obviously we are still very much a white community, even in the midst of this rainbow event. And we want to have that kind of leadership very much having major influence in our program this year. And so you take those kind of steps. But I guess my hope would be that both here and in the church, that there would be more and more opportunities where you really do have a very inclusive group and not just a couple people who are in leadership sort of trying to present a certain culture or different kind of worship or whatever to, again, an entirely white group. And I think there's a place for that at some time, but I think we have to be real careful with that.
Sarah?
I'm thinking along similar lines, and I'm not even sure how to state it, but I think one of the, for me, one of the best parts of this week was a session that happened yesterday when we were discussing the letter from Birmingham Jail. And it was I think, Penny, it was you that was asking people about, what about racism today? I mean, we were all talking about in the past, and you just quietly turned to someone next to you and said, well, do you see any examples of that today? And the room went wild. I mean, it was just really neat. A lot of different people talking, and these were not the experts. These are just women who shared some of their stories. Not that just women, but I mean, you know, they're just as important as anybody else, but they weren't seen as experts. But I learned so much from them in that half-hour discussion that I think it was much too short. It should have gone another hour. I was just fascinated. But it wasn't because they were seen as anybody hugely important that came in to do something for us. It was just a simple question, and you got exciting answers. So maybe that's all I need to say.
It's the dialogue that makes the difference.
Exactly, that's what I mean.
And having the opportunity for the questions to be answered so that we can become more knowledgeable about each other, not just focusing in on one group and then another group and then another group, but what are our common concerns and aches and pains and happinesses and joys and crazies. That's what makes us all a part of this village. And sometimes we sort of focus in on topic, and then, I don't know, we don't get to the dialogue till it's 20 minutes to, and then it runs out, and everybody runs to dinner. Or there's this sort of thing, you know. I don't know how you get around that, but the most exciting things happen about
5 minutes.
It's in any hour session, it usually everything builds for the last 10 minutes. So that's the exciting part, is that dialogue and how to make that happen so that people really talk about their heart and their soul.
Sure.
I just had a reaction to what you said about the music. So it's really kind of hard for me as a musician to watch Tress direct the way that she did. I just took conducting last semester. I spent 2.5 weeks learning how to stand.
Yes.
I liked the music. It was very singable. My father actually sounded good singing. and something that as a conductor, that's something that's really emphasized is starting together and ending together. And with the Rainbow Choir, it seems like the music just kind of comes in and goes out like it's never stopped. It just keeps on going.
And it violates every rule you ever learned, right?
it's very nice that, you know, there's that sense of the ever music going on and on and on. It's very nice that it never stops. But of course, we can't forget about Bach and what a master Bach was, and I would hate to see that be lost.
it's just a different, you know, it's enjoying a different style.
And it's very singable, but you know, Bach is tough. And you know, it's nice to have some singable stuff.
Well, that's what multicultural is sharing all of those differences and similarities amongst us and enjoying all of that and trying something new.
It's not a question, I think, of forgetting Bob, it's just a question of realizing that there's more to the world than just Bob.
There.
Thank God.
Spent three semesters. Little Bob and God.
Yes.
I have, does anybody have, share a one impression with me that these last 3 days have been too easy, that people have been having too much fun, that in the United States in 1987, when the races are growing further apart, where in fact residential segregation is increasing, where the income gap is increasing, where there's fewer contact, where there are more incidents of overt racial hatred than we have had since the late 1950s, that we are all up here on this mountaintop having a great time in a very artificial, in both the worst and best senses of that word. And part of me says, we won't have done this. We won't really have done this unless it gets a little harder somehow for us. I know it's been hard for some people already. I really acknowledge that.
Without us giving a thing of whether this is a sin, whether this place is a sin, you can't start that question without ending up with that question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a serious one.
Mm-hmm.
Whether
getting rid of this place is the way to bring about something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should run from that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, and we've talked about the singing, but one other major impression from the last several days that I've had comes from a series of things that happened, I don't know, somewhere between 10:30 and 11:15 in the evening in the sauna, with the watching the mix of the black and white teenagers who had essentially, from the South Bronx and from Seattle, who literally knew each other's names, and that was all they knew about each other's cultures. And it was absolutely fascinating and enthralling to watch them learn about each other intentionally. And that was good, real good stuff going on.
I take the high school group of Project Close Up, which is a week in Washington where you take high school kids in and they use Washington as the classroom. And Vermont was paired with the Bronx last year. And the first session that they did was they took great big white pieces of paper and said, what are your stereotypes about each other? And then they put them up all over the room. And Vermont invariably had cows and hayseed and just real backcountry guys. And then the Bronx was, there was a little bit of fear and knives and violence and all that sort of stuff, and that went up too. But in the hotels, there were 6 hotels in Washington that are used, and 1,000 kids come in every week from all over the United States. And every room has 4 kids in it, 2 and 2, 2 from Vermont and 2 from Bronx. And that really pushes you together.
Mm-hmm.
And really makes you really come together. And I've never seen anything like that. And sometimes you have to contrive situations to make it happen. But it was a powerful, powerful experience to see that whole thing happen for the kids. And I have done a lot of cross-cultural training in my experience. And the feeling of, aha, I learned something. I saw it on Marilyn's face when she went to the first time she sang, when she got a standing ovation from us. She was so surprised. I think she was like, she was given the gift of our love, and she was surprised. And that bothered me for a minute, and then I thought, but it's our gift to you, and you can accept that, and I'm so very grateful that we can give that and share with you. And more of those ahas between people are what I'm looking for, and finding ways to make it happen.
Could I reflect on your answer from the Hispanic background, as I understand it? Among the Hispanics, there's a great sense of fiesta. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of fun, but they have a lot of fun often in fiesta when the things are serious. The consideration is serious. And just because you're having a good time doesn't necessarily mean that it's frivolous.
Absolutely. Jack?
Well, I was going to say, I agree with that last comment, but I do share some of your concern. I think we're real early on. Mm-hmm. And I think as relationships begin to build, we're going to get to some of that stuff from them. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get to all of it because we couldn't.
Short time.
But it's early.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think that, you know, the friendships and the bonds that are forming are not artificial or frivolous and very important. I made two new little friends, Tights mm-hmm. and Aaron.
Yeah.
And their mom told me that, you know, once that bond is there, they're mm-hmm. you're their friend for life. I'm like, you know, well, great, I'll be their friend for 2 weeks. But I've got to move to Texas. So that's really neat. And but I do feel like we have the potential to maybe do a lot more than we are doing. But the things that have already happened have been very important.
I can appreciate the fact that this is set up to be mainly for adults. However, I think that the easiest cross-cultural relationships that are forged very readily and without any coercion is among the youth. And I mean, I go to Senate conventions for adults, and I see them standing in their little separate close. Groups. And then I go to youth conventions at the synodical level, and I see people relating. You know, you put the music, right kind of music on, and everybody's going to be relating with everybody. And so I say, don't shortchange the fact that you know, I'm personally focusing on the youth, and that's who I brought here. And they're going to go back, and they're going to be Holman Village ambassadors, no matter who you're set to, you know, geared towards. So don't shortchange the worth of the, and I know you're not, but, you know, don't discount that. Don't discount the weight that they hold when they state their opinion.
I just want to chime in here. I've been intrigued with the comments, and I would be remiss in my responsibility as a Christian colleague and a lifelong Lutheran if I didn't say this may be my 15th round of this per generation. You know, you keep wondering where is the problem or what is really wrong. Elmer and I went through this way back there when we were upper teenagers or practically or whatever you want to call it. But I want you all to know that the oppressiveness of the demonic is so persistent that it, as a Christian, you ought to feel, if you don't believe it, I don't believe it, that the demonic will win. I got a hunch that especially Lutherans, since I know them the best, really believe that this is a fruitless thing, the demonic will win. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's the case, then we ought to stop going to church on Easter and you ought to stop fooling around with the sacrament. And I get pretty vicious with our folks with that because our faith is at stake. Now, it's not at stake based upon theological dialogue. It's at stake based upon our dysfunctional competence. So I want to lay that on you in this sense. That my further experience with Lutheran is that they can methodologically and process anything that they feel like doing. You understand? That's my experience with Lutheran. Now on the basis of that, then I would like to say this, that my understanding, this I just came out of Africa, and we climbed a huge mountain, it's called Great Zimbabwe. And when I got up there, I could only experience one thing, and that was, I shall lift up my eyes unto the hills from which come, so forth. So this thing that popped out of me. Well, we received a tremendous religious experience at the expense of getting too crazy with that. But when we came down the mountain and came back to our lodge where we were staying with guys from Oxford and all the rest of the people from all over the world, who had been up there, I said, well, what did you guys experience up there? They said, what do you mean, what did we experience up there? They didn't experience anything up there. I said, well, what did it mean for you to be there? They didn't have no meaning for them. Well, the question has come up in this group, and I thought it was a significant question, you know, what think ye of being up there? Well, what I think about it up here, perhaps this might be a place where we get ourselves together with Yahweh. With this understanding that you didn't do it, you didn't get yourself together up here with Yahweh, if you can't go back down in the valley and do what the 23rd Psalm is all about, then somebody was kidding somebody up here. But it ain't got nothing to do with what's wrong with up here. It's got something to do with what's wrong with you after you left from up here and went back down in the valley. You don't be attacking the wrong stuff. So that's my little contribution and program solution to that. That is, it just depends on what happens to us when we are together. Either you faked it, didn't believe it in the first time, or you got real scared when you got down the valley. That's all right, though, because I think we need to face all that kind of stuff, because when we start moving into this next decade, the people of color will probably not wait on whites. I'm going to tell you straight out, they probably won't wait on y'all. And there is a strong possibility that it is the will of God that no people of color get in office in Lutheranism, for some particular reason, which I would not like to have any theological dialogue about. It might be funny, but I think all those things are up for grabs, and that's why we get a chance to take a breather from all that hustle and bustle down in the valley, get ourselves together with God, with each other, have a great time, be filled up again, and bingo, pop down there and do something that Lutherans aren't good at doing. We do not like to disobey even the demonic. In other words, we are waiting for somebody to tell us that it is okay to do those things which we know God has said is already all right. I think we just need to rehearse those things again. That's all. I'm not talking about something nobody else knows in this room. We're talking about stuff that each one of us, you know, uniquely knew about long before we got here. So our job is to help us remember, and it is most fascinating that's why we take the Eucharist, to do that so that we won't suffer from amnesia.
Welcome to Holden, Pete.
Yeah, that's really nice. It's good to hear folks talk about it. I'm trying to keep it in perspective and to keep it holistic. Because the problem isn't up here. The problem is back down there when we get back in that valley. And somebody says, "By what authority did you run around here and go somewhere with this black or this Hispanic person? By what authority do you dare to love them? By what authority?" Then we get weak in the knees. And so forth and so on. So I think that's where we are.
Okay. That's a good place to be.
Some people call folk that do stuff like that silly, crazy, fools for Jesus. They don't put Jesus on. And things like that. Fringe people.
You don't have to be crazy to be a Christian, but it sure helps.
Well, this is a crazy venture for Holden up here in the mountains in these 10 days. And we're glad to be here, and we're glad everybody in this room is here. Let's make it continue to be lively and filled with the Spirit.